Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 665, Update on the Meltdown, Part 2. This has been recorded on March 1st of the year 2009. Well, we're going to plunge right in where we left off on Side 1. By the way, even I experienced the occasional senior moment in the heat of concentration, so to speak. Now, the current Attorney General is Eric Holder. Michael Mukasey was the last of Bush's attorneys general. His son Mark, working for Rudy Giuliani's law firm, is representing Frank DiPasquale, who was basically the go-to guy for Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. And, of course, Joanne DiPasquale, his wife, was working for J.P. Morgan Chase. And J.P. Morgan Chase just happened to be one of the companies managed to get some dough out of there without alerting investors. They made off with the money, so to speak. Looming in the background, again, I'm not going to have time to go into it at great length in this broadcast, but looming in the background of these global money flows and global capital hemorrhaging looms the underground Reich, literally a Third Reich that went underground and perpetuated itself in mafia-like style, using its tremendous amount of economic leverage, what one banker told the late Paul Manning, it was the greatest concentration of money power under a single control in history. In turn, it wasn't a lone nut operation, nor was it a freak occurrence. It was the outgrowth of the international cartel system. Just as the Bormann Capital Network corralled all of the liquid wealth of Europe for the underground Reich, so too Imperial Japan corralled all of the liquid wealth of Asia for the Japanese fascist infrastructure, which also basically perpetuated itself after World War II. That can be accessed in the book Gold Warriors by Peggy and Sterling Seagraves, The Underground Reich and Bormann Capital Network, in the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the late, great Paul Manning, available for download for free on the Spitfire website, spitfirelist.com, the best source in the world for anti-fascist research. However, even though I said I was not going to go into great length, go into the Bormann Group at great length, of course, it looms in all probability in the background of the Madoff scheme, as well as very possibly elements of mafia. The Madoff operation was a global operation, and he was anything but the lone nut he claimed to be. We closed Side 2 by taking a look at a bill that would enable the government to more effectively fight financial fraud, something we should all be supporting very, very wholeheartedly. Bloomberg.com has the following article from February 20th of 2009 by Christian Baumgartel. It's headlined, Germany asks Liechtenstein's Prince Max to pay investment taxes. We've looked at Liechtenstein as one of the Underground Reich's money-moving operations in a number of programs, Alpha Males, that's FTR 530, as I recall, and also Alpha Males Part 2. The evidence is very strong there. And take a look at some of the interesting dates here. Again, this is February 20th. German tax authorities want Prince Max von Un zu Liechtenstein to pay taxes on investment gains of a foundation set up by his family, LGT Group, the bank owned by Liechtenstein's royal family, said in a statement. Lawyers for Prince Max, who lived in Germany from January 1999 until January of 2000, and again since September of 2001, note that date, dispute the tax authorities' view and are working with them on a solution, LGT said in the statement, which was emailed to news organizations late yesterday. Quote, I have always fulfilled my tax duties in Germany to the best of my knowledge, unquote, said Prince Max, who is chief executive officer of LGT, and said in a statement also, quote, if contrary to my conviction it turns out that I owe taxes to the German state, I will meet my obligations promptly. Well, the 800-pound gorilla in the room here, of course, is the fact that Liechtenstein, basically, it's a lean, mean money laundering machine. It's a tiny little country. It is an independent country with like 30,000 people in it. It is also a monarchy, or was. They're obviously still, it was an absolute monarchy for a short period of time. It is inextricably linked with the Alpha Group, along with the Robert Bosch Foundation, and the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft, and the Argentine-American either foundation or federation, I'm not sure what it is technically named. But those appear to be basically the MBA feeder programs for the Borman Capital Network. Mohammed Atta came to this country under the auspices of Carl Duisberg, Gesellschaft, and we've talked about those in numerous broadcasts. Again, go to spitfirelist.com. German authorities have noted that a great many German citizens, as well as others, have been avoiding taxes by placing a lot of money in the Liechtenstein financial system. LGT Bank is basically owned by the royal family of Liechtenstein, which is very close to, basically a little more than an outcropping of, the House of Habsburg. And the Habsburgs, of course, Karl von Habsburg, the heir to the throne of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the, basically the Austro-Hungarian Empire, is the head of the UNPO, which seeks to use indigenous peoples, small native peoples, to break up larger countries. He is married to Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza, the heiress to part of the Borman Capital Network. Old Fritz Thyssen was one of Hitler's earliest financial backers. Thyssen AG, formerly called Vereinigte Stahlwerke, one of the key elements of the international cartel system. Fritz Thyssen was funding Adolf Hitler in 1924, along with his American business partner, George Herbert Walker, the great-grandfather of the recently departed former president of the United States, George Walker Bush. One of the interesting things here, note the timing. In addition to the fact that Germany now wants Liechtenstein to get up off of some of the ill-gotten gains that have been stashed, or gains that have been ill-gotten by stashing them in Liechtenstein's banks. Note that he lived in Germany from January of 1999 until January of 2000. Then he went back to Germany in September of 2001. Of course, that was a very portentous month. It was the month, of course, of the September 11th attacks. Looming very large in the background of those is Bank al-Taqwa, the financial institution of the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist group allied with the Axis in World War II, and CIA, among other institutions in the post-World War II period. Youssef Nader, the head of that institution, was a Nazi spy in World War II, and the institution itself may very well have been set up by François Genoux, a Nazi banker and heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. LGT actually had accounts held for Bank al-Taqwa, or basically Bank al-Taqwa did some of their banking with the House of Liechtenstein's bank, LGT. In fact, al-Taqwa was actually incorporated in Vaduz Liechtenstein. So do note this here. Germany wants the House of Liechtenstein to pay some taxes. If, in fact, international investigators and legal authorities actually do start nosing around in Liechtenstein, they're going to come up with a lot of very interesting things indeed. But as we look at the meltdown, as we look at the enormous hemorrhaging of capital in these almost unimaginably large ripoffs. Remember the things like September 11th, the BCCI scam, Iran-Contra, and many other of these operations involving tremendous moving of capital sub rosa around the world. They overlap with criminal syndicates, drug trafficking, terrorism, and a great many other things indeed. When one goes into the book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, again, available for download for free at spitfirelist.com, one of the main Bormann network, Bormann Capital Network banks is the Union Bank of Switzerland, which, by the way, took on some of the assets of the failed Enron organization. UBS is now the focal point of American investigators in the Obama administration. Applause for the Obama administration under these circumstances, is looking to get UBS to turn over information on as many as 52,000 U.S. customers who have concealed their accounts from the Internal Revenue Service in violation of tax laws. Almost certainly there are a lot of U.S. investors in LGT and Liechtenstein as well. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, February 20th of 2009. This is an AP story by Devlin Barrett, headlined, U.S. wants more names in UBS Bank secrecy case. Dateline Washington, it reads in part, a government lawsuit filed Thursday seeks the identities of tens of thousands of people who hid billions of dollars in assets from the IRS at the Swiss-based bank UBS AG. A defiant Swiss president pledged to maintain his country's bank secrecy laws. In the suit filed in Miami, the Obama administration wants UBS to turn over information on as many as 52,000 U.S. customers who concealed their accounts from the Internal Revenue Service in violation of tax laws. At a time when millions of Americans are losing their jobs, their homes, and their health care, it is appalling that more than 50,000 of the wealthiest among us have actively sought to evade their civil and legal duty to pay taxes, unquote, John DiCicco, the acting assistant attorney general, said in a statement. A deal announced Wednesday provides access to about 250 to 300 UBS customers who used Swiss banking secrecy laws to hide assets. To avoid prosecution, UBS agreed to pay $780 million, which Justice Department officials said was the largest ever in a criminal tax case. The bank's chairman, Peter Kurer, said UBS accepted full responsibility, unquote, for helping its U.S. clients conceal assets from the IRS. But that does not mean the bank is about to fork over information on thousands of other accounts. On Wednesday, the United States claimed in court papers there were close to 20,000 U.S. clients who hid assets through the UBS program. A day later, the number had climbed to 52,000. U.S. officials offered no immediate explanation for the revised estimates, but said it was another sign they are raising the pressure on the Swiss bank. Well, this is a very important case indeed. Basically, what we're looking at is the Obama administration's Justice Department putting heat on a key Borman Network bank. And that is something that generally carries very severe retribution. Next week, we're going to be updating events vis-a-vis September 11th and related matters, the Muslim Brotherhood, some of the old SAR network and Operation Green Quest players. When I talk about the Muslim Brotherhood, by the way, we're always getting newer listeners to the broadcast. A station just came online in Sandpoint, Alaska. One should not lose sight of the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization, in my analysis, are basically the foot soldiers, and they are very numerous foot soldiers for the underground Reich, really for the underground Axis. Although I don't agree with everything that the Obama administration has done, it really is doing as good a job as could be expected and has been a breath of fresh air. I think that President Obama is literally in the most mortal of danger, and I think the stage is already set for another September 11th, only something far worse, maybe a nuclear September 11th. I'll go into some of those foreshadowing, some of those very ominous gases rising up from the lower seismic layers of power politics next week. But what Obama and what his Justice Department are doing is very, very good indeed. They're finally, somebody is going after the Borman assets. And if people think it's sort of arcane that I talk about the Borman Network or that I spend as much time as I have on the remarkable, quintessentially important book, Gold Warriors by Peggy and Sterling Seagraves, it is because that's what controls the money. As the famed bank robber Willie Sutton said when they asked him why he robs banks, he goes, because that's where the money is. Well, the reason I talk about Martin Borman, Nazi in exile, and Gold Warriors, that's where the money is. And, of course, money laundering is as Swiss as chocolate watchmaking and yodeling. So when people start looking for where the funny money's going and they start looking into Swiss banks, that portends some very, very grave things indeed. And, again, I think it's great that the Obama administration is going after UBS. That will not go without retribution, mark my words. And I think the outlines of that retribution are already taking shape, and they are going to be devastating beyond belief with a capital D and two capital Bs. Speaking of Switzerland, Newsmax.com did just exactly that on February 23rd of 2009. An article by Julie Crawshaw, it's headlined, Economist Warns Switzerland Could Go Broke. Economist Arthur Schmidt says Switzerland could go broke because Swiss banks extended billions in credit to Eastern European countries, which now can't pay back the money. Quote, Switzerland, like Iceland, is threatened with a potential national bankruptcy, unquote, Schmidt told the Swiss daily Tagesanzeiger. Loans made in Swiss francs stimulated rapid economic growth in many Eastern European countries, Schmidt says, making Swiss currency very important. Swiss banks lent francs to local banks, which in turn lent them to their customers. Such loans were especially attractive because interest rates were much lower than required for loans in local currency. The system worked as long as exchange rates between Swiss and Eastern European countries remained reasonably stable. Now, Eastern European countries are falling, and more borrowers are having problems repaying their loans. Quote, because of the devaluations of the national currencies, the debt to Switzerland has increased by more than one-third, Schmidt notes. Again quoting, many of the Eastern European countries have serious payment difficulties and are virtually bankrupt, unquote. Schmidt says the value of Switzerland's currency could drop severely or its credit rating could be massively downgraded, creating economic trauma in a country traditionally regarded as a stronghold of financial stability. The franc could become an unstable soft currency, Schmidt says. Then Switzerland would perhaps be forced to abandon the franc and take on the euro, unquote. Note that. If the Swiss have to abandon the franc and take on the euro, that would fold them into the European Monetary Union, which, as I've spoken about in numerous broadcasts, is basically the realization of the plans for European and ultimately world political domination set forth by Friedrich List in the mid-19th century, who saw a German-dominated Central European Economic Union as a vehicle for achieving German world domination by unseating Britain as the top imperial power in the world. That is no longer Britain. We're sort of the top dog, I guess one could say, in that regard. And basically, the Third Reich took on the Friedrich List model for political control via economic control. In the description for the book Germany Plots with the Kremlin by T.H. Tettens, that description is available in the books section of SpitfireList.com. You will see an article that was written by Dorothy Thompson in the New York Herald Tribune in May of 1940, in which she predicted what would happen in the event of a Third Reich victory. It's basically what has taken place. So note, not only is Switzerland in dire shape economically, but if they have to abandon the franc, they're going to have to take on the euro, then they will be folded completely into the European Monetary Union. Switzerland isn't the only country that may be going down. Iceland has already melted down, so to speak. Perfect metaphor there. I'm going to be doing an entire program on the Icelandic meltdown. It's very interesting indeed, and will shine light on some very, very interesting phenomena. The Times Online, that's the Sunday Times of February 15th of 2009, that's the British London Times, not the New York Times, had the following story by Ian Day, Ireland, quote, could default on debt, unquote, reads in part, fears are mounting that Ireland could default on its soaring national debt pile and continuing worries about its troubled banking sector. The cost of buying insurance against Irish government bonds rose to record highs on Friday, having almost tripled in a week. Debt market investors now rank Ireland as the most troubled economy in Europe. Simon Johnson, the former chief economist of the International Monetary Fund, called for this weekend's meeting of G7 finance ministers to put Ireland's troubles at the top of the agenda. Johnson said, quote, don't please tell me more about the basic principles of financial reform unless and until you have addressed the Irish problem. And don't tell me the Irish have to sort this out for themselves. Eventually, the world always comes to help. Check your notes on Iceland. It's much better and much cheaper to come in early and decisively. We need a plan of action for Ireland, and we need it now, unquote. Pledges made by Ireland to support its banking sector amount to 220% of the country's annual economic output. The total loans held in Irish banks are more than 11 times the size of the country's economy. Following the scandal at Anglo-Irish Bank over undisclosed loans, the market fears there are more hidden problems that could ultimately fall to the state to resolve. So Ireland, formerly an economic tiger of Europe, now tottering perilously on the brink. They aren't the only ones. The United Kingdom itself may be going down. The following story is, you know, I neglected to note where I got this. Well, this will be available in, this comes from, the source is the Hennessy Group. I will have the URL for this. I unfortunately blew it in printing this up, but that's why the descriptions exist at spitfirelist.com. The ultimate source of the Hennessy, of the source for the article is the Hennessy Group. This is Dateline Wednesday, February 18th of 2009. I will annotate this in the sourcing in the description for the record 665. Headline, UK, quote, could experience a crash similar to Iceland, unquote. The global financial crisis could be entering a new and more treacherous phase, unquote, which could push international countries to the brink of failure and further hinder the global economic recovery, according to the Hennessy Group. Charles Guadante, co-founder of the Hennessy Group, points out that Iceland had one of the highest standards of living in the world just a few months ago, but after experiencing the fastest economic collapse in history, it is suffering from soaring unemployment as well as double-digit interest rates and inflation. Hennessy Group says there are other countries that share some of the same characteristics as Iceland, particularly with regards to its debt to economic output, and could be vulnerable to the same devastating effects of the financial crisis. It believes it is imperative that world leaders pursue the appropriate policies to stimulate trade and promote worldwide growth so it does not enter a global economic crisis similar to that of the 1930s. After privatizing the banking sector in 2000, Iceland's banks went from being largely domestic lenders to major international financial intermediaries with foreign assets worth nearly 10 times the country's GDP. As the banks dramatically expanded overseas and foreign money poured into the country, the Icelandic economy experienced exceptional growth and prosperity. Iceland was considered in 2007 to be one of the richest per capita countries in the world. However, as the global financial crisis picked up steam, it exposed the weakness and dependence of Iceland's economy on the banking sector, as well as its vulnerability to a staggering economic collapse. Hennessy Group research believes a primary contributor to the rise and fall of Iceland's economy was the vast size that the country's financial sector grew to relative to its GDP and fiscal capacity. Gradanti says, quote, Iceland's three main banks, Kaupthing, Landesbank, and Glitnir, I may be mispronouncing those, built total liabilities of approximately 10 times the size of their gross domestic product, up from about 2 times in 2003. In addition, approximately 80% of the liabilities were in foreign currencies, leaving them at risk of a currency collapse, unquote. As the market seized up, Iceland's banks started to collapse under the heap of foreign debt they took on over the years. As concerns mounted about the stability of Iceland's banks, foreign investors fled the country, prompting the value of its currency to drop nearly 50% in just 1 week. The collapse of the currency left banks and citizens with loans originated in foreign currencies in a very tenuous situation. The weakening currency led to their debt obligations nearly doubling. As the nation's economic crisis deepened, unemployment rose from 1% to 10%, inflation soared to nearly 18%, and the stock market lost approximately 90% of its value. Hennessy Group research believes that while Iceland's circumstances were unique in many ways, there are countries suffering from similar risks which could leave them just as vulnerable in the current crisis. One particular statistic of concern is the large amounts of external debt certain countries are currently carrying relative to the size of their economy, GDP, and will continue to build as they battle the economic slowdown. While there has been a lot of discussion regarding the mounting debt of the U.S. to recently implemented bailout programs and stimulus packages, Hennessy Group research believes the U.S. appears relatively stable in comparison to their international counterparts. Currently, the U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio is approximately 100%, with the bulk of its external debt mostly in dollars. Repeating that by way of emphasis, because this is some fairly dense analysis, currently, the U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio is approximately 100%, with the bulk of its external debt mostly in dollars. The Netherlands currently has a ratio of approximately 328%, while Ireland has built a debt-to-GDP ratio of 900%. However, the two countries that appear most susceptible to an economic collapse are the UK and Switzerland. The UK's debt-to-GDP ratio is currently 456%, while Switzerland's is 433%. Gradanti says, quote, "While these countries are much bigger than Iceland, they do share certain characteristics that make them vulnerable to further economic hardship. Both countries have developed into major financial intermediaries over time and have grown sizable external debts that are denominated in foreign currencies," unquote. Now, all of this, of course, is very troubling indeed, and we should not lose sight of what the Great Depression produced. It produced, among other things, wide popular support for fascism. I would not say that it produced fascism. That was an outgrowth of really globalization. As explained, by the way, in the introduction to the books section of the SpitfireList.com website, and others are noting the economic collapse and what it is likely to produce politically. By the way, don't go contacting the FCC over the last name of the British minister. This is actually his last name. The following is from the British Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph, of February 10th of 2009. It's an article by Christopher Hope, headlined, "Ed Balls, Minister Fears Rise of Fascism Amid Economic Gloom," subtitled, "The economic crisis could spark a resurgence in the far right, a close ally of Prime Minister Gordon Brown, as suggested." It reads in part, "Ed Balls, the Children's and Schools Secretary, said the downturn was likely to be the most serious for 100 years, and his comments appeared to raise the prospect of a return to the far-right politics of the 1930s and the rise of fascism. His warning in a speech to activists at the weekend came after a trade union baron warned that far-right parties were trying to hijack the campaign for British jobs for British workers," unquote. The row over foreign workers has gathered momentum in recent weeks, and Mr. Ball seemed to suggest the recession could trigger a return to the far-right politics that prospered in the Great Depression of the 1930s. He told Labour's Yorkshire conference, quote, "The economy is going to define our politics in this region and in Britain in the next year, the next 5 years, the next 10, and even the next 15 years. Quote, I think this is a financial crisis more extreme and more serious than that of the 1930s, and we all remember how the politics of that era were shaped by the economy," unquote. The remarks are significant because Mr. Balls was a key advisor to Mr. Brown during his decade at the Treasury as Chancellor of the Exchequer. Mr. Balls said that he believed this to be, quote, "the most serious global recession for over 100 years, unquote. He said, again quoting, "We now are seeing the realities of globalization, though at a speed, pace, and ferocity which none of us could have seen before. The reality is that this is becoming the most serious global recession for, I'm sure, over 100 years, as it will turn out," unquote. Last week, Derek Simpson, the General Secretary of Unite, gave warning that far-right elements were hijacking a campaign against foreign firms bringing in non-British workers. He said, quote, "We are deeply concerned that other organizations like the BNP are latching onto the movement for their own racist agenda," unquote. Well, now it isn't just Dave Emery warning about the rise of fascism, is it, folks? Now, the British cabinet is warning about the same thing. Well, it doesn't look good, but that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And you could do nothing better than to join in the effort. Use the information at SpitfireList.com. And also, you can support the work that I'm doing because, folks, it is very important indeed. This concludes For the Record program number 665, Update on the Meltdown, Part 2. This has been recorded on March 1st of 2009. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.